Transforming Bodies, a judgment-free zone where Trish answers all your burning questions about aesthetics procedures. Find out what and who is the latest and greatest, and gain clarity on what options are out there to leave you feeling good in your body.
Hello, listeners. It's Trish Hammond here from the Transforming Bodies podcast. And today I am joined with Tom Seary. Now, Tom Seary is the founder of realself.com. And if you haven't heard about it, you have to have been living in the dark ages. But anyway, today we're going to have a chat with Tom about how the business started, why the business started, and all of that. So welcome, Tom.
Hey, thank you for having me. And I'm glad to shine a light on something that has been part of my life for a long time.
Totally. And you know what? I am so excited and honored to be chatting with you because I've known about Real Self for ages. And then, you know, I met you last year and I'm like, I got to do a podcast with you. And you said yes. And I was like, yes. So it hasn't taken us long. But
it's a pleasure.
Yeah, thank you. So tell me, first of all, when did Real Self start and why and how did you even, you know, get the idea to start such a community?
Yeah. I started Real Self 15 years ago in a spare room in my house. And the concept was really forged around what I saw happening in online travel at the time, which I had been part of. I was in the early stages of the development of Expedia.com. And I know Expedia is a global brand now, but that in the early days, you know, my friends saw it as a little crazy to go work where someone would, you know, help others get bookings online. They thought that was a strange thing. So it was fortunate that I joined that company, but also that we were brought together with TripAdvisor, which was really amazing as a company. What they were doing was, I think at the time there was like 15 employees and they were getting hundreds of thousands of clicks a day, but it was all based on this idea of people sharing their real true experiences on something that's really important to them, which is where they travel, where they stay, where they take off their clothes, where they shower, where they take their limited vacation time.
Yeah.
And my wheels start turning of like, well, if this is so powerful for a big decision like travel, what about healthcare? And I told my wife I was going to quit my pretty good job and say, yes, and go do TripAdvisor for healthcare. She told me that was a bad idea and I should go back to work. And so I did. And her point was, it was too broad. It was just, well, healthcare. I mean, in America, that's $1 trillion US dollar industry. Weeks and weeks later, she went to get her facial somewhere and came back and said, you really should look at this. And she had a brochure and she handed it to me and it was a brochure for a laser treatment. And they said, mm-hmm, they recommended I get this. It's 1500 US dollars. And, I said, okay, I don't really get this idea that you'd burn your face off to look prettier, but okay, $1,500 is a lot of money. She goes, yeah, and I don't believe anything in here. And the brochures, you know, shows a perfect before and after, tells me everything's going to be wonderful. And I know that's not the truth. Mm-hmm. And that just really was the lightning, you know, the light bulb moment of saying, oh, wow, I think I can do this. And I start digging into this world of what we now some people might call medical aesthetics. And mm-hmm, discovered that it really needed a place where people would share these type of authentic experiences with these treatments. And that's how it got started.
Amazing. And so what year was it?
That was 15 years ago. So 16 okay. years ago, really.
Okay. Yeah. That's not even that long ago, really.
Oh, well, okay. If you talk to a Gen Z, they think you're, you know, they think I'm a dinosaur.
Yeah, but, yeah, that's true.
You know, I like to say, I've explained this to people who are from younger generations that the business was started before social media and before the iPhone. So mm-hmm, in many ways, we were trying to stimulate what is now much more common, which is somebody that's willing to post up their own experiences, their true authentic self. And we just happen to be ahead of that trend.
Yeah, because I think what's happening now, people are more happy to share, but I think on Real Self, they've kind of been sharing since it first virtually gone up, you know, like whereas people, because it was cosmetic surgery, cosmetic procedures were a little bit more taboo, I guess, kind of when you started, hey?
Yeah, no, I still think there's, and our research has shown that there is still considerable stigma that is associated with the world of aesthetics, and there's no shortage of individuals who are willing to point out, oh, that's fake and that's not right, and judging, the people that make a decision to what they want to do with their own face, body, or smile.
Of
But
course.
yeah, that's also, but for sure, when I started, it was kind of, as one of my friends said, this is kind of crazy, Tom. And I was
Yeah.
like, good. You know what? Sometimes the more laughs you get or more sort of questionable looks, when you're pitching a business idea, the better. Because if it's just mainstream, then that means there's probably thousands of competitors, and your ability to carve a niche is more
Yeah.
limited.
Yeah, of course, of course. And so how, like, what's an everyday look like at Real Self? Like, because are there people sitting around on computers? Like, do you have an office? Like, what does it look like?
Well, that is a great question for reflecting on how much things have changed. I mean,
Yeah, from your garage.
we've, you know, yeah, and we've traditionally, when I was, and now I'm the chairman of the business, I've appointed a CEO, and it allows me to do a more range of activities and a little more strategic thinking than just execution, which has been fun for me. And why I got to go to Australia, frankly,
Yes,
and see you there and meet
I
you and
know.
meet the people there.
Yep.
But the business was, as most startups happen to be, we were based in the Seattle region, which is a very hotbed of innovation and lots of support for entrepreneurial activity. And the idea was to create a team, and most of that team was based in Seattle. If you fast forward to today, we are distributed across probably 20 countries. We have a large operation in Barcelona, but we also are in Alexandria, Egypt, and we are in Mexico and Costa Rica and many other places. And that has really was both a strategy, but also COVID accelerated a trend, which was to move virtual. So today we have an office, a beautiful office in Seattle, a beautiful one in Barcelona, and both of them are woefully poorly attended in terms of employees. If anybody needs some free office space in Seattle, just feel free to contact me. We have lots of floor space. So the team is distributed widely, and I think it's been actually a remarkably positive thing in terms of acquiring great talent, letting people live where they want to be. And so a day to day, to answer your original question, sorry, I meander a bit. The day to day looks like, structured teams around engineering and product, which are constantly thinking about how to bring value to our customers, and also, deal with day to day operations of the pretty complex systems that we've built over the years. And we have even a group of people who manage calls from and intercepting calls, that are people trying to reach doctors and help those individuals get successful appointments and contacts with those practices. And we have editors and writers who are trying to help explain what sometimes is pretty opaque or confusing content and making it more authoritative and reviewed by surgeons and doctors around the world. And the sales force that is really about engaging our doctors and teaching them about how to really meet consumers where they are, which is they want transparency, they want good information, they want to see more photos. And by country, of course, there's different regulations, but that in general is the idea, is to help them find a path to attracting new patients and earning their trust before you walk in the door as a patient.
Yeah, and you know what? One of the things I really love about Real Self is really pretty much the mission itself, and the fact that, and I guess that it kind of sounds like the exact reason that you started it, and that's the worth, like the worth of the procedure, the worth of the practitioner, the worth to the patient, and all that, and that's kind of the word that stands out for me, and I guess that's probably, I guess that's probably exactly kind of the reason why it started in the beginning, hey.
Yeah, the notion of, I was looking, after my wife inspired the, hey, look at these things closer, I realized that an opinion of whether, say, a treatment like Botox is worth it or not was really, there's a bit of subjectivity there because it's aesthetics, and you may, your doctor may think it's a fantastic result, but you as the paying consumer customer may say, I feel like it just wasn't enough, or it's too much, or not in the right, whatever. And
yes.
So we introduced the worth it rating, which is a, you know, a percentage of consumers who say thumbs up to their experience or thumbs down to their experience with a specific procedure. And I've had doctors come to me and say, you know, they and we've polled our doctors, and they use it routinely for whether they should add a new device to their practice, whether patients are having you know, how satisfied they are with basic surgical procedures. And it's interesting how it does line up quite well to what their own practices have experienced with these options and procedures out there. And then, of course, there's star ratings that doctors are able to acquire, or patients can share, which is an authentic, you know, here's what I thought about my experience and the quality of care I received from that practice or provider.
And doctors, because doctors can, it's a great way for patients to speak to doctor without any, you know, like if they want to, they can they ask a specific doctor a question, or can they just ask a question that any doctor can answer? Because I know that if you've got a question and you don't want to, you know, perhaps speak to a doctor face to face, and you just kind of want to, you know, just ask a question, you could do that on Real Self, can't you?
Yeah, I mean, there's the most common format that we've developed was a Q&A where a person can post a question, and then doctors from around the world can answer that. And this is also true for our international properties as well, Multi-Aesthetic and a bunch of you know, over 15 different properties now, and Taj Mahal in the Middle East. We seek to have doctors answer it authentically and without promotion. And so, you know, don't respond to a question a consumer has about, is open versus closed rhinoplasty better for a, I don't know, bulbous tip nose? That question can be posted to doctors. And if we don't have a match in our system, we then can send it out to the doctors and say, would you like to answer? And I think our last count was we have about 4 million Q&As.
Wow.
So there's a huge treasure trove of data and content. And we can talk about how we're going to leverage that in the future with AI and other, you know, future innovations. But and there are, you know, there is outreach to doctors, which are frankly the most common question people want to know is how much something costs.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, globally, and I don't know if you see difference in Australia, but there's this reticence, if not complete, distaste for this idea of sharing pricing information for a practice or a surgeon or doctor. And but guess what? As cash paying consumers, that's one of the first things we want to know is, like, we don't want to be embarrassed when we're standing in front of the doctor and saying, well, how much would this cost? And they say it's $8,000. We don't want to be like, ooh, oh wow, I was thinking 800.
Yeah.
Which is awkward and uncomfortable
totally.
And a big waste of time for everyone.
Yeah. And the thing is, to see that doctor, you're paying $300 to start off with. So why would you see a doctor for $300 when you know that, you know, that figure that they're perhaps wanting is totally out of your budget? You know, so you're probably gonna have to look at a different doctor who may not be as, you know, who you may not like as many of their before and after pictures, but if they're within your budget and you make that choice. So yeah, I do like the fact where the price is transparent.
Yeah, and I see it. If you talk to, you know, I know several surgeons in the United States who actively share the pricing transparently on their website and on social media, and they say that just leads to much higher quality exchanges with consumers. It's not how much does something cost. It's like, okay, am I a good candidate for this, or do you have availability? And so it just doesn't feed into this concern that it's race to the bottom. It's about, you know, tire kicking and commoditization. I think that's overblown. But look, every practice is different.
Well,
They
exactly.
screen in different ways. So
yeah,
know,
exactly.
I'm not here to judge.
Yeah, exactly. And I was going to ask you as well. So you mentioned earlier that, and it must be an absolute nightmare trying to work out the different legislation in all the different countries. And the reason I mentioned this is because I know Australia's just going through that thing at the moment with the changes in their legislation. How does RealSelf deal with that? Because it is like clipping people's wings to say, okay, well, you can't, I mean, I guess patients can share things with each other, but it's sort of like, it can be quite, it's just a bit unfair, I think, when they sort of, introduce these rules that is not kind of fair to the consumer to see, to be transparent, basically. But how do you guys deal with that?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up because I don't really have a political view on it. It's more of a, from a consumer's perspective, as I mentioned earlier, they want transparency, they want authenticity, and they really want as much information as they can get because it's a big decision. You know, if you're going to change your body, face, or smile, it can be permanent. It could be enough that it leads to a pretty dramatic change in how your outlook in life and so forth. So, and it's a financial outlay that is real. So, while I think regulatory bodies are rightfully concerned about advertising and advertising injury that happens when only a positive view of the world is shared, I think platforms like ours do a good job of bringing balance. And so the new Australia medical board, has the new regulations that have been promulgated around advertising rules. Our view on that is that, on testimonial advertising, basically don't just telling doctors, will you please stop or you must stop saying to the world how great you are and look at my star rating and look at this and look at this patient review. What we've said is like, we believe that our platform is actually just showing an aggregate of here's what patients say, and quite contrary to, what may be concerned, one of the concern of laws is like the doctors are promoting just a positive view. We actually have faced litigation in Australia multiple times because we do not allow doctors to manipulate their reviews. We do not take negative ones down due to desire of somebody to say, well, I'm a paying customer or I'm unhappy with this and so forth. So we think that in the end, we think our platform is actually really well set up for doctors to be able to advertise because they don't have control over the review function on our platform, which is explicit in the law that Australia has passed. And we're taking a further step of saying, if a doctor does advertise on our platform, we will no longer put on that advertisement any reference to patient testimonials or reviews, meaning star rating, the aggregate view. We've never pushed a view of like, look at me, or I love my surgeon, check me out, or check this doctor out, type advertising on our platform. I think Facebook and others are going to have challenge because they're sort of built around just all businesses, not just doctors and practice like we are. So we're able to move quickly, adjust. We're going to communicate to our doctors in Australia and customers, that we're aware of these law changes and we're going to protect your concerns of flouting the laws. But anyway, so that was a rambling way of saying we totally believe in and will always argue in favor of patients sharing their authentic experience. And I don't think the Australian law or any other international law is trying to stop that.
That makes so much sense. And I love the fact that I love the fact that the website is genuinely authentic. Do you know what I mean? Like the fact that you've taken that's not stance, but I guess you followed through on that stance. Yeah, exactly. Whereas if the information is provided by patients, it cannot be manipulated by the practitioners, because I know that that's been known to happen. So I love that what you see is what you get kind of thing on the website.
It's been a very hard business to run because we have a paying customer who is in a world where everything is needs to be in control. And yet our proposition to consumers is openly share your authentic experience. And if it's not positive, that's, and it's true, truly what you're experiencing, then so be it. And the best thing we can do to that doctor is to say, we're sorry that you're challenged by this one patient. Have you tried reaching out to them? Maybe there's a way to cure this in other formats or forums. We're not here. We don't arbitrate between these. Mm-hmm. And it's really, I have empathy for all sides, but you know, for a paying customer doctor, it's a little galling sometimes to say, wait a second, I'm paying you and I can't control my reviews. And mm-hmm. we say, that's correct. You cannot control your views. And now the Australian government and your legislators, or I don't know exactly your governmental forms, but you know, the people who promulgate these laws, the medical associations are really supportive of this view that doctors should not have control over reviews and use it to manipulate public opinion and making them seem like everything's going to be perfect. Because we all know, the behind all these procedures and treatments is a human, and it can have a bad day. They can have a patient who has an adverse reaction that's unexpected. They could be poorly trained. They could be amazingly trained. So there's a whole bunch of variability that makes it important for consumers to find places they can trust. And you're right. We've been pushing that hard for well over a decade, and it doesn't always win us plaudits from all doctors, but we've had thousands of customer doctors around the world who have been with us for the entire period and have learned to really see the benefit of our format and forum.
Yep. And I reckon people do not want to see 100% five-star reviews, because then it has to be a little bit, you know, questionable, because, you know, you're not going to do everything perfect 100% of the time.
That's right. I don't think with AI, you're right. And it, AI is just going to make this even more difficult. Is how do we as humans know what's truthful and not, and what's authentic and what's not?
Mm-hmm.
And so we're going into this brave new world that is at times both exciting and terrifying, as you've probably heard in the press of, you know, these AI experts saying, well, this is just, there needs to be regulations here, because this could be really bad. But for sure, when we go look at restaurant reviews, or I like to think of Amazon reviews, when I see a light bulb's been reviewed 36,000 times and it has a 4.8 star rating, I'm just sort of, and it's got, all this information from people.
Yeah.
There's this company called Fake Spot. It's an app that I've been playing with, and it uses AI to sort of detect what they think is a true rating for that light bulb. And they'll grade it. And so that light bulb might get a 1.9 star rating, and they'll grade it on an A to F, so like a D rating. And it's pretty amazing when you see the level of manipulation that has happened in the world of online forums and reviews. Patients aren't looking for authenticity. So it's less about the star rating, frankly, and people are looking for, okay, can I see real photos, real results, and hear from a real person?
Yes.
And that's what I think is why social media is so powerful. And none of these regulations affect the ability for a consumer to keep sharing their real experiences. And that's what we tell our doctors is, like, your patients will continue to, if you give them great care, they're now more and more willing to share that on platforms like ours, Instagram, TikTok, and so forth.
Yep. That makes so much sense. And, you know, you were talking about AI. So how does, and this, I won't ask you any more questions on this, because otherwise I'll be talking to you all day. How is AI going to not affect real self, but will real self be incorporating some AI into it? Because I think you kind of mentioned that a little bit before, but can you give us a little snapshot of what that might look like?
Yeah, our CTO is the better one to give the much more technical view. And he'll probably listen to this podcast and pull his hair a little bit, going, wait, no, it's not quite that. But he described at our last board meeting as, think of this as just to get a frame of reference of where we're at. Because it's a big buzzword, right? AI, it's all over the place. We're just in sort of the dawn of, like, this is like the next internet. Like, this is the the first days of the internet, like AOL, you know.
Yeah.
And so this is just like we're at, and the, you know, but yet the rate of change is so unprecedented. So it used to be, you know, you would, a computer scientist would hear something in research and bring it to their workplace from a paper. You know, it'd be like 8 months, 2 years, 5 years, you know, later it's implemented. Now things are, a paper could be presented at a conference on AI, and 2 days later, it's in the wild on the, you know, available to in some application or format.
Yes.
So we just, you know, at this point, computational power of Google, you know, their system, ChatGPT, is much greater than a human brain. So the rate of our learning is sort of capped, right? We can expand slightly as we, you know, apply ourselves, but as humans, whereas computers are able to, and these algorithms or language models are able to basically far exceed any human computational power. So what it means to us, okay, let's break it into what I think it will mean to companies like ours, is it's an existential moment. It is a, if every startup, every company that has a presence on the internet isn't thinking about what is AI going to mean for our business, how do we adjust, they're going to be dead in the water, because we were going to find more and more applications where we can just simply ask for information and we'll get robust responses that are comprehensive. We don't have to do this silly click, click, click and look for the blue link and find it on Google and so forth.
Yeah.
That's going to be, you know, the dinosaurs like myself are going to be doing that while my kids are going to be, you know, just able to communicate with a bot that is customized for them, you know, and an agent that is their own agent that helps them through decision making for, say, a classroom project.
Yeah.
So we're using it. Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
No, you go. Cause yeah, please. No, you go.
Well, I think that for us, we already use AI tools across multiple areas of our business, and those are almost exclusively for efficiencies. For instance, we'll do videos of doctors at various events around. Right now, I think we just do in the United States, where we'll interview them and have a really great session trying to introduce them to our audience and to their own social audiences. And instead of that video just being in this big format, you have to pay an editor to chop it up into bits, you can just run through an AI solution and you get immediate shorts that can post immediately to YouTube or wherever format and do it in like seconds, minutes, seconds, no editorial or limited or editorial engagement involvement, proofreading all of our blog posts, go through, you know, making sure they're optimized for best audit, you know, best grammar and so forth. Grammarly, our Salesforce has tools to help improve their targeting of messaging. And so any business that is around that isn't using AI tools today probably doesn't realize they already are using them in some other system like Salesforce.com and so forth. They're being integrated in things like, you know, Gmail, when you're typing, all of a sudden it finishes the sentence for you and you're like, oh, wow, that's AI. You know?
Exactly. So, yeah.
So that's just from a pure operator of a business, we have that piece. For customized, for aesthetics, we're looking at, well, we have this massive trove of data and content. How do we put it together in a way that allows a consumer to query and say, one, like you said earlier, I have a question. I want to know, you didn't pose a question, but if you had a question about that open versus closed rhinoplasty, you can get an immediate response and then what you should look at next from the system that we want to build and the language model that we're developing on the back of ChatGPT. So that is just a simple mechanism for us to then bring that to apps and other formats where it just makes it for a much more customized, personalized experience than we could possibly do without AI.
And I guess the fact that you've got so much built up content there over the years as well, it's almost like Real Self can be a library of, you know, like, because it can be a library of, if you want to find out, you know, how many people choose this over this, or how many. So you've got a massive resource of research there, I guess, of what people that are actually into aesthetic procedures are looking for, like genuine.
Yeah, what we've tried to do is poll. Genuine. And what I've told doctors is really what we're trying to do is take what amazing knowledge you have in your heads that you share in very private settings, you know, in a consultation or patient interaction. And we're trying to get you to share it broadly. And they've done that. And they've met us where we like them, which is please stop hoarding that information, because it's so, but it also helps your personal brand, by the way. But please share that. So we've had those postings, and it is knowledge. Now, there's a lot of noise, so to speak, in that content. There's still a lot of unnecessary statements that are made or things that aren't really prescriptive and helpful. So there is, and there are fees associated with licensing of ChatGPT, and so there's a lot of complexity, is my point. And we're at the very early stages. So while yes, we feel like we have some competitive advantage there, I also feel like we're in a race to adjust to what is a just seismic moment for all businesses.
Absolutely. And I guess the good thing about you kind of taking a step back and putting a CEO in is the fact that you can actually do exactly what you said, is work on it rather than in it, which is fantastic, because you're always going to stay on top of everything.
Yeah. I mean, do you hear much about AI in your realms with your interactions in the industry?
Well, it's really funny because we just had a conference last weekend, and I was actually honestly expecting a whole lot of AI stuff in there. But I guess because it was for practitioners and injectors and stuff like that, there wasn't too much to it. But I think if the business side of it, you know, that's like everybody's talking about it, like we're using it in what we do, but probably only, you know, like 0.1% of probably what we should be using it ourselves as well, because it's hard to, I guess, know where to start unless, because I think it's something that it's like you have to be working on it all day, every day to sign it, kind of know about it. And then, like you said, it can change so rapidly. It just has to be your full-time job, keeping up with AI.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's when something is so early too, it's hard to, you know, it's hard to predict where we'll end up and land. In the end, we'll hopefully be in a place where it will be a world where, for instance, in skincare, it won't be this mysterious formula that a dermatologist has in their head that they share with you, or some algorithm that's pretty basic that's on a commercial website. It should get to a place where, for instance, your skin can be closely assessed, evaluated, fed into a model that then produces very specific targeted advice and recommendations that not just are for products, but for your overall wellness.
Yes.
And that's why I'm pretty intrigued about what they're doing at Hydrafacial with their new systems for basically their latest systems will feed data from that treatment back into the patient's app. And the app will share more customized and personalized information for you as a patient. Well, I don't know, a customer of their of their treatments.
Yeah.
So that there's one company there that's already on that cutting edge. Board.
Yeah, exactly. And it will just be a domino effect, I think, once as tends to be the case, someone starts and I was like, oh, okay, I better catch up. So you're spot on. I think you're spot on.
Yeah, I mean, if you're getting a laser treatment, for instance, there's a lot of feedback and data that comes from that procedure that could get fed back to you. And again, or even to the practitioner, and make them more effective. Saiton, I know, as a laser company, is looking at using these machine learning algorithms to make it much safer to administer a laser treatment. So almost a person like me could even deliver it without making a mistake.
You should mention that, because I was actually watching a demo that was happening on the weekend for a cycling device and patient, and having the screen there, and Gerald was like, yeah, this, and so, oh my God, it's almost like preset for exactly, you know, the person on the table once you've just, you know, answered a couple short questions. I'm like, wow, this is actually quite mind-blowing. So
yeah.
Well, I've got to say, that's been so interesting. I've been dying to speak to you, and it's just like I feel honored to have spoken to you today. So I really, really appreciate your time. Excuse my voice, because like I said, it was a big weekend.
No, I met you in Australia. I loved your country, the people. Yeah. I was blown away by the level of sophistication of the practices there, and also just the patient education. So I think Australia is just one of the most, and your affinity to Asia and those trends. Mm-hmm. I just think you're on the cusp of where things are headed, and while I might talk about technology ultimately, I think you're probably closest to the trends, and so I hope we stay in touch. And I can't wait to listen to our posting here and hopefully interact with your audience down the road.
Absolutely, because we are per capita, I believe, the biggest users of the non-surgical treatments. So, yes, we're definitely up there, even though we might not have as many people. The percentage, we like to look good. I feel good.
And you get a lot of sun.
We do get a lot of sun. Exactly. So we're great patients. We're lifelong patients.
Yeah.
Well, look, thank you so much, Tom. Thanks so much for your time today.
Absolutely.
I really appreciate it.
Wonderful.
If you don't, yeah, it's been great. Well, listeners, look, if you haven't heard of Real Self, it's just realself.com. Check it out. There is like so much information. Be prepared to spend hours and hours and days and weeks and weeks, months on it. But yeah, you'll get there. So thank you so much for joining us again, Tom. Have a great day.
Have a great day. Thank you.
No worries. Bye.
Got a burning question for Trish? Message her on Instagram at Transforming Bodies, or join the 12,000 plus people in the Facebook group Plastic Surgery Support Forum for Aussie Chicks.